This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 343 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Elizabeth S.
So, announcements this week. We have recently moved shops, I guess, to from where you can purchase things with the artwork from our Outlander Pod logo on. We were on Redbubble. We have recently moved our things over to TeePublic. And if you want to go take a look at that and see what their offerings are, it is www.outlanderpod.com/shop. And one of the newest and greatest, and honestly, one of the reasons we moved over there was because they now make masks. And Redbubble had them, but for whatever reason, they wouldn't let United States customers purchase them. So that was strange. They are 100% purchasable at the TeePublic site. And so again, if you want to go check that out, it is www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
As far as we know, things won't run out because they probably, as you know, in online shops, they make them as they're ordered on demand, I guess. And since we announced it in our group, which if you're not part of our community, join us at outlanderpod.com/group. I don't know. We've sold they've been kind of going. Kind of shockingly.
Last count, I think it was 83.
Mother have mercy. So it's been like 24 hours, just over 24 hours. Oh my gosh.
And there are two different types of masks. There is a single layer mask, and then there is a double layer mask that appears to be, now I don't have one in my hands yet, but it appears this in between the two layers is room to slide a filter in. Don't quote me on that. As soon as I ordered ones, and it should be arriving in, all of their shipping is delayed like everything in the country right now, right? So they say within a month. It will be here in like 20 days. I did the slow boat shipping and it was like 20 days.
So do it today when you hear this, and then you'll surprise yourself in August.
That's right. Be fully covered in my artwork in August. And please, what better way to promote the podcast than wearing my art on your face?
That's funny. Could you imagine wearing a shirt, carrying a bag, wearing a mask? I mean, maybe they have scrunchies too. Oh my gosh.
I just want my art on your face. Come on, people.
Oh my goodness. Wear my art. Well, that's awesome. Face. I have not bought mine yet, but I need to. Yeah. That's exciting. I can't wait. So I hope you guys check it out. So they won't run out, but there is, as Summer said, a nationwide and probably honestly worldwide kind of backup as far as shipping kind of goes for a lot of things. Go check it out.
And there's a bunch of things there. The only thing that's not there that was on the old site was t-shirts, and they're fussy. I'm still working with them. So I don't want to try to sell them when they don't look perfect. And as the person who designs the site, you have to decide where on the shirt the logo goes. And I can't tell what that'll look like without doing some major fussy work. And I just haven't had time yet, but those are in the works.
Well, fussy work. And honestly, we may have to like order a few to
check them out and see if they're any
good.
Once
you fuss with it for a bit, we have to order a few to actually see what they look like and then give if they're decent, which I'm sure they will be. And what makes things extra special, we think, is not only are they really cute. I mean, actually, they're really pretty. And they're, you know, you should have it. Wear your mask, people. But between now, so when we open, which was actually, I think, Friday, right? I'm sorry, Thursday, like yesterday. So I think we opened July 2nd. So between when we open and the end of the year, so that's the end of December 2020, we will be donating 100% of anything we make. So all profit, anything we get from not just the mask, from anything from this site, to Broadway Cares COVID-19 Emergency Assistance Fund. You guys know, if you've listened to us for a hot minute, like more than 10 episodes, you know your girls were bought up by mom and dad and Broadway shows. So we, it just made the most sense of, it's a cause we both love, you know, it's a cause. It sounds weird. Broadway's a cause. Giving money to these people, if you guys know, you know, because COVID and the pandemic has affected a lot, right? A lot of industries, a lot of people, a lot of job loss, a lot of unemployment or underemployment, just so, and of course, illness and death, like tons of stuff. And Broadway, understandably, and probably well so, has closed because of, you know, tourism, obviously, is travel is down, all the things, right? And also, it's not really safe right now to be in huge crowds and everything. So they closed down at least through some point in 2021. So that's an entire industry, an entire, you know, group of people that has historically, traditionally, at least in our lives, and we know in others too, has brought us so much love and entertainment and joy and all of that. So we wanted to do just a little bit to give back to Broadway and help out people and artists who are in our favorite artistic industry, if you will, or are our favorite artistic spot, and that is musical theater. So we hope that this, if you're on the fence at all, we hope that this maybe helps you make a decision to make a purchase for something that we hope you love in the look of it. But also knowing that 100% of anything we make from the sale through the end of the year will go to Broadway Cares COVID-19 Emergency Assistance Fund. And thank you in advance for any purchase you guys make.
And thanks for putting my art on your face. My art belongs on faces. Anyway. And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with Chapter 6. It's a long one, y'all. This one took me a while to read. Entitled Ambush.
Lee M. writes, Ambush. Our characters all spend time reminiscing or thinking about the past as a means of processing the present, even when the past is actually the future.
That was a lot. That was very circular.
It was. Yeah, it is. Have you read Outlander?
A few times. Just a couple times.
Just a little bit. So Ian, we open, it's been a little bit, if you're listening to this like months from now or even weeks from now, y'all, it's going to be like chapter 5 to chapter 6. So if you're listening in real time, it's been a bit since we were with Ian. So we're back with Ian. Ian is still in Claire's surgery after the tree attacked him.
But I want to know, is tomahawk a euphemism for his penis?
Tomahawk. Oh, Lord, I don't think so.
Because it says, Ian woke abruptly, hand closing around his tomahawk, or what should have been his tomahawk, but was instead a handful of breeches. I'm just saying, is it a euphemism for his penis?
Oh, that's funny. I didn't think about that. I didn't catch the whole breeches bit. Maybe, I don't know. We have to ask Diana.
And in fact, from now on, if they ever mention Ian's penis, we should just call it his tomahawk.
You're funny.
I can tell you think so.
I don't always necessarily scream with laughter. That's just sometimes.
But that's the best time.
He wakes up from his dream of being stalked and he's got to pee. Maybe that's why he grabbed his tomahawk. He had to pee. He gets down from the table, goes to a window to pee out the window. And he hears Jamie, Claire, and McDonald and Archbug chatting away in the other room. And he hears McDonald ask Jamie if he'd be, okay, forgive the word. I don't know how much it comes up in this chapter. I mean, it comes up a lot in the series, but I know.
I mean, it's the chapter title for the next chapter.
Oh, Lord. Well, okay. So it's a period.
You're going to just have to say it. It's a title. It was a period specific.
Yes. So
title.
Well, obviously it's a role. It's a title. It's a title of the next chapter, but it's a role. It's a person. It's a job. So McDonald asks Jamie if he'd be an Indian agent. Now, Diana through Ian. So what does an Indian agent do? Ian tells us that the crown employed men to go out to the tribes offer them gifts, tobacco, and knives and the like. Quote, tell them silliness about German Geordie, as though the king was like to come and sit down by the council fires at the next rabbit moon and speak like a man, unquote. And Ian recalls an agent who had come to the Mohawk while he was at Snaketown. So he has firsthand experience with these agents. Lee M. writes, we get a glimpse into Ian's personal experience with Indian agents when he lived with the Mohawk. Hashtag bad sweat. Yeah, when he describes the guy about how he stank so much. Rollo exits the building through the window.
Hashtag what now? What did you say? Hashtag what?
Bad sweat.
Bad sweat or vag sweat?
Summer, B-A-D. It's a dude.
Bab? Okay. I can't understand what you're saying.
Okay, I'm just saying, if you remember the Ian's description of the agent dude who came to the tribe, he sweat really bad. Rollo exits the building through the window to tree a cat. Some kind of cat. Uncle Jamie comes in to check on him.
I want you to know that I had to scroll through the chapter to see that it was B-A-D sweat because I thought you were saying bab. B-A-B sweat. And I was like, is that a Scottish term for like balls? And then I also thought you were saying sweat, which V-A-G for vagine. Yeah. So I had a real hard time understanding you there. Okay. Bad. B-A-D sweat. Okay.
Okay. We'll probably keep that in there because that's funny. Ian seems uncertain about the coming war that Brianna has told him about. And any anxiety that Ian feels is relieved by his uncle's calm presence. Much like how Big Ian made Wee Ian feel secure with his presence when Wee Ian was just a child. The security of Big Ian's presence when Ian was a child is echoed in the present by Uncle Jamie's strength. So regarding being an agent, Jamie was not about to be pressured into giving an answer to McDonald. And as Lee pointed out, Rollo makes some noise and he wants out to go get an animal, which likely turns out to be Adso. And also, as Lee mentioned, Ian mentions the coming war with England to Jamie. And Jamie agrees, or I guess admits, that yes, Bree and Claire both knew about it.
Did they know about it? They're the ones who told them about it.
He doesn't know that. Jamie's trying to bring him in the fold.
But shouldn't he? Shouldn't he know about that, though? Because he knows they're time travelers now. He found that out at the end of the last book.
Yes.
So that should not be a surprise. They should 100% know about their past, his future.
Lorraine writes, now, I find it hard to believe that young Ian is doubting this information when it was he who brought Ottertooth's journal to Claire and the family, who confirms that she, Brianna, and Roger are time travelers, too. Jamie helps Ian decipher the Latin, and Ian learns the story of the Montauk Five. Perhaps it's that Ian can't fathom that the Americans and English would go to such lengths to get their own ways as opposed to not believing Bree and Claire. We're left wondering this until Jamie comes to investigate the noise of Rollo going after an animal, and Ian asks him if he believes them, leading me to imagine that young Ian is still skeptical of time travel. When Jamie says yes.
No, he did also have a blow to the head.
Okay, I thought you were just about to say a blow to his tomahawk. I was like, wow. Yes, he was attacked by a tree.
I said he did have a blow to the head.
He was attacked by a tree. That's correct. When Jamie says yes, he believes him. It gives Ian the willies. I always thought that off page, so to speak, Claire would have explained Gilles and her mission to change Culloden's outcome to Ian. To drive home the validity of time travel since he'd been drawn into Galus's mad plans. After all, Claire has already told young Ian, along with Lord John, part of Galus's story when the two of them were suffering from the measles and wanted to know who was the murderer of Mrs. Alcott. Claire also told them of the Fraser prophecy made by the Brachan seer. So Ian would be familiar with that and knows that Brianna is a descendant of Lovett. And was in the future when Gilles was trying to sacrifice him in Jamaica. Well, just tell us all, Lorraine. Gracious.
So if you didn't read the last book, you're all caught up.
She's right. You're right.
Thank you, Lorraine.
that you're caught up now. No, you're caught up since book three. That was Voyager and drums. You're great. That's awesome. We love it. You guys are awesome. Mrs. Bug comes running back, relaying that Roger and Bree aren't home, and Ian falls asleep, or back asleep. Roger and Bree, of course, were on their way to the McGillivrys to see Jem. On the way, they play the minister's cat, and she compliments him on his funerary declamation prayer.
Was it a compliment, though, or was it more like a, how did you come up with that one? Like, I expected something a little lighter and a little less that.
It was that. It was all that.
She doesn't say that.
That was interesting. That was a choice.
I know.
And then she talks about the stuff she'd need to bring water to the house. So meaning like plumbing to the house, basically, or bring water from a creek with pipes.
She wants, what is it? Inside plumbing? What is it called?
Or running water. Yeah, at least.
Yeah, running water. But there's a word for it. It's like it. Internal, not internal plumbing. That's weird.
So to do this, she would need some kind of pipe. And he mentions, well, what about concrete? That recipe is in Pliny. I'm like, you just dropped that. Like, you know all this crap. I mean, he does, obviously. But like, really? I did not know that. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Well, hopefully it's not. It's going to be here. I can't take it out. So my computer, I'm almost moved over to the new one. So that noise, I don't know if it's going to be in the recording or not, but I can't take it out if it is. So you guys, if you hear a little in the background faintly, hopefully, if it's there, it's my computer, which is almost on the fritz. I'm not that interesting.
It's just her roommates having sex.
I mean. Oh, no. This is my Summer. You're funny.
We record one night a week and they can't hold off.
You said roommates. You mean my next door neighbors? Come on.
I mean your computer and your cats. Those are your roommates.
Oh, Lord. So if you're going to make pipes, you need some like to make the pipes out of something. So there's like metal, too expensive. You know, Roger brings up the idea of clay after concrete. And she's like, huh. So that kind of stays in her mind. And we may or may not hear about that in the future. Lee M. writes, Roger and Bree set out to collect Jem from the McGillivrys, feeling anxious from the destruction they witnessed at the Dutch cabin. Anxiety of the present and fears for the future are calmed by memories of their past. Which is in the future? You gotta love TT. To calm their fears, Roger and Bree play around of the minister's cat. Bree commends Roger for his words at the funeral for the Dutch family, and she is surprised that he didn't quote the Lord's Prayer from the 23rd Psalm. Roger was surprised as well and doesn't even appear to realize where the biblical passage that he did quote came from. His recitation came from Job.
Did he just like channel the Bible?
He must have something. It just came out.
He just stood there and he was like, oh God, just anything, just something come out of me. What? Anything, Bible. Just speak through me, Bible.
His recitation came from Job 19. Job is the third of the three books of wisdom literature of the Hebrew scriptures. Proverbs lays out how the righteous are to live. Goodness is rewarded and evil and transgression are punished. The second wisdom book, Ecclesiastes, says, now, wait a minute. Sometimes good is rewarded and evil punished, but not always. Then the book of Job tells the story of a completely righteous man that suffers great loss despite his goodness. His friends gave him a very proverbial answer and say that he must have done something to make God angry and deserve such torment. But he did not. And at the end of the book, God himself shows up and affirms that Job did nothing to deserve the disasters that have befallen him. Sounds a bit like Roger's story up to this point, doesn't it? Roger has certainly been through his share of suffering and loss through no fault of his own. I mean, except the kiss. Come on.
So are you implying that Roger is Diana's personal Job?
I mean, maybe. This is not me. This is still Lee M.
Oh. Lee M, are you implying...
That whole thing. Job, in the midst of great suffering, is able to proclaim that in the end, quote, I know that my Redeemer lives, unquote. Undeserved suffering. Does this speak to the past or portend the future? Maybe it's both. I will say this. I will interject. This is Ginger. I will interject. Is it past or portend the future? You know what's in the past, the hanging. So that definitely portends the past. But what about the future? So this is book six. There are currently 8. 9's coming out, and there's going to be 10. I can tell you, ain't no Diana book without some undeserved suffering.
Or deserved. Some people deserve it.
I mean, I'm not, hold on. That's true. I'm not saying it's not, but she didn't write that. She just wrote undeserved. Mm. But yeah, so if you've seen season 5, you already know some undeserved suffering that happens to a major character in this book, which we won't talk about. But yeah, she says maybe it's both. And she finishes with, we then get an engineering discussion in which Brianna tries to devise a way to bring hot water to the cabin utilizing clay pipes. It is engineer Brie on the job. Seems like wooden pipes would have been easier by the time she creates some kind of furnace and all and fires all that pipe.
Did you just say wooden pipes?
Back to the store. Yeah.
Those wouldn't last as long as you'd like them to.
Yeah, they would rot. Yeah, they would rot. As they're about a quarter mile from the McGillivrees, Bree starts to get a feeling.
That tonight's gonna be a good night.
Oh.
Tonight's gonna be.
Well, I mean, it is later at the end. It is.
She had a feeling. Ooh.
And then they hear, oh, it's you. And I laughed. I almost always laugh out loud because I forget about it. And then I read it. It's like the Beardsleys are like, oh, or one of the Beardsleys.
They're are so like, disappointing.
Oh, it's you. So
to be honest, that's the exact same reaction that most show only watchers had every time they pan to Roger and Brie.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's you. They want Claire. They want Jamie.
So the Beardsleys, or at least the one who can hear well, had heard them coming and thought they might be brigands. The word, they're like, where did they get that word? We thought you might be brigands. The word they got from Lizzie reading to them from Defoe's The Pirate Gow. But the fear of them, the fear of brigands, Kenny Lindsay had told them about the Dutch cabin.
I thought for certain you were going to give me the Latin term for fear of brigands.
What?
Whatever that is.
Summer, you're a nut.
The fear of brigands, also known as
brigandophobia. Whatever. I don't know.
Brigophobia. Brigandophobia. Well, I was just talking today with my daughter who was born on, she was born on Friday the 13th. And prior to her birth, everyone had superstitions about the number 13. And I was telling her today, I was like, well, you know, I don't fear 13s anymore. And I was like, you know, and I said, you know, I no longer have triskaidekaphobia. And she was like, what? I was like, triskaidekaphobia. It means the fear of the number 13. And she was like, they have a name for that. And I was like, there is a name for everything.
Oh, girl. There's a name for everything. Just start. Oh, man. What a future she has.
So, Ginger, what is the fear of brigands?
I'm just
What is the fear of brigands in Latin? Brigandophobia.
So, the brothers, the Beardsleys, do not join them on their way to the McGillivrees. But before they leave them, Brianna gives Joe a whistle. And one that I believe she'd carved. And she tells him, and she shows him how to use it, and they play with it. And she tells them that they'll to use it in case to call for danger. And she says that she'll make another one, and so they'll both have one. And I've often wondered, not that she necessarily did it on purpose, but that she did it that, you know, so that she had the option to pick it up or not. I will say this, and it's not really a spoiler. We've read book 8 a number of times, and there's no whistle we've ever heard. So I've always wondered, not the first time through, but like the third or fourth or fifth, and then now, if that whistle will ever be used to save someone's life. I mean, it may be off page, obviously, but I always wonder, it's almost like, although not as maybe as interesting, it's to me, it's almost along the lines or the same category of that piece of the cello wrapper bag from the peanut butter and jelly sandwich in Voyager. Mm. It's like one of those things that just happens. It's thrown away and you never hear about it again, but you're like, oh my gosh, she littered in the 18th century. He's like, this is so great. I love it, right? It's just little tiny things that book readers are kind of nerd out with or kind of nerd out on. And yes, I was like not sobbing, but I had tears when they gave us that little scene of her with the peanut butter sandwich episode. When they gave us her from Voyager, throwing it down. Oh,
the last episode.
Oh, was it last? No, not the last one.
Or no, it was the second to last. That was the peanut butter episode.
Yes.
The episode where all they did was talk about peanuts.
Oh, Lord. Where Summer couldn't. Yes.
I couldn't focus and Summer, on anything what, else.
What do you? And what do you call the next to last of something, Sam?
Penultimate. Yes, I know what it means now.
Stop it. Your favorite word. So I've often wondered if we'd ever hear that whistle in the future.
I use it correctly and incorrectly and all the times in between.
Oh, Summer.
Because I like the word so much.
But I've always wondered if you, or often, not always, I've often wondered if we'd ever hear about that whistle in the future. So it's one of those things, and she, my guess is she didn't do it in, for any reason necessarily, but it's one of those things where you do, and it gives you, you can pick it up later on.
I feel like they just lost it.
Oh. Or she didn't get a chance to make a second one. Either way, I can say, maybe I already said this, it's not a spoiler, I don't think, because y'all probably don't care about it. But we've read the 8 books and it hasn't come back. So not yet. So we'll have to see if it comes back. Lee M. writes, Bree talks with Roger about how the twins have probably never been given a toy, and we are reminded of what they lost at the hands of Mr. Beardsley. So that was kind of sad. They talk of kids and they're being spoiled. This is Roger and Bree again. And this led to her thinking of a second child. Quote, the thought of another baby always made her feel as though she were perched at the top of a roller coaster, short of breath and stomach clenched, poised somewhere between excitement and terror. Unquote. They talk about their upbringing, her at Catholic school and his as a reverend son. He was, quote, the terror of Inverness. And he had a gang when he was 15. In order to protect his future or make sure he didn't continue getting involved with the wrong crowd, the Rev signed him up to work on a fishing boat with a herring fleet for a summer. Brianna mentions that the Beardsleys follow Lizzie around like tame wolves rather than dogs, and that Manfred McGillivray, her intended, had better take care to be nice to her.
I don't think... And then they also talked about how Lizzie was teaching them manners. And I was like, that's not all she's teaching them.
Well, that is true. Lorraine writes, best line ever from Brianna. Quote, my Aunt Jenny had the raising... Okay, she's talking about Fergus. My Aunt Jenny had the raising of him from the time he was 10. You haven't met my Aunt Jenny, but believe me, she could have civilized Adolf Hitler if she put her mind to it. Unquote. Lorraine continues, I sometimes feel like I'm not always sure how old the kids are when I'm reading. And in this chapter, Diana tells us that 5-year-old Germain is 2 years older than Jem. I think Joan is also 3 and Felicite is 1 year old. I tried looking up their birthdays in both the Outlandish Companions and Diana, true to her word, of not being too interested in dates and ages, they were not listed. Thank goodness for Outlander Wiki. Well, the McGillivray's house was full of people. A bonfire was out front. There's music and dancing. And remember in chapter, in chapter 5, we were talking about how when Brianna and Roger, they left to go to the McGillivray's to get Jem, right? To see Jem. But part of something that didn't hurt was that they were really curious about who Senga had chosen for her husband. And so now they have found out that she chose the poorer of the dudes, a Heinrich. So speaking of whom she chose,
no one was surprised. Come on.
No. And how her name is Scott.
I don't even think Ronnie Sinclair was surprised.
No. And how Senga's name, Roger explains that her name is Scots. It's the name Agnes spelled backward. In other words, backspelling. And they do their own names. Roger is Regor and Brianna is Anerb.
He sounds like a Viking.
He does, totally. And what is... Mine is not so wonderful. Mine is Regnig. What is yours?
Mine's Remus.
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 Yep. We did that a long time ago, people. We didn't have to think about it because we did that probably in elementary school. Mm-mm. Or middle school. Lee M. writes, another trip back to the future comes with a discussion of backwards Scots names. Senga is Agnes. Regor is Roger. Roger tells Bree about his rebellious years trying to escape his preacher boy image. He laments that he and Jem will never experience a Godzilla movie together like he did with his father, Reverend Wakefield. And Roger tells Bree that the Reverend would have liked her so much. Backwards names reflect how time travelers experience time backwards. The future is their past. Huh. That's another thing. I definitely did not catch on that.
They see some kids winding about, but don't think it's Jem. And then a small child finds her. And then Uta sees them. And as I said, it had been Heinrich. Roger's going to have a drink and chat with poor Ronnie, who is, you know, wasn't chosen. And Jem is there. And he jumps up and down and he says he wants a drink. So Lizzie helps serve Brianna some food and seems not concerned about her betrothed when asked, like, oh, well, where's Manfred? Oh, he's over there. Jem runs off with Germain. Uta, Brianna, and Hilda chat about the choice of grooms. And Uta still has an eye out for someone for Ronnie. So Uta doesn't matter even... Well, but it's all self-interest, right? Because she's on the outside is like, don't worry, we're going to try and find you somebody.
It is, but you also have to think that these people are bored.
People what? Oh, of course. No, no, no.
These people are bored. Like, this is her sports. This is what she does. And also, she's also doing it because she wants to keep his land in her family. She wants him to marry somebody in her family and then keep... It is selfish, but it's also entertaining.
Absolutely. It's both. It's entertainment that benefits both members of the couple and benefits the McGillivrays in the future.
And I guarantee you, no one who went to that party and that house is full of people really cared who she chose. They just wanted a party.
Oh, absolutely. So Brianna has a bit of sympathy for Lizzie, who will be living here with the McGillivrays. And there's an aunt or tante, an aunt Gertrude, a widow, is suggested maybe a match for Mr. Weems. But they're concerned that she'd squash him. So apparently she's rather kind of large. And then a man named Pastor Behrisch introduces his sister, Fräulein Behrisch, to Mr. Weems. But she was Protestant, so Lizzie quickly dismissed her. That was not going to happen. Then Germain and Jem come up to her. Jemmy is blank-faced. He collapses. He was drunk off his booty. That's what the book said.
No, he's not blank-faced, Ginger. He said he wasn't blank-faced. He was shit-faced, okay? He was
faced. Yes, he was. He was drunk off his batoot. And Germain collapses too, singing...
Off of Cherry Bounce.
Alouette. You know what that song is?
Alouette, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I don't know the words.
Alouette, gentil alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai. So basically, he's singing a song. Well, yeah, it's a popular, you know, I can't say children's song, but it might be for English-speaking kids. But for French-speaking kids, or whatever, it means it's a guy or a person, the singer, is talking about taking, plucking the feathers off of a dead bird, preparing it for cooking, I guess. Then while Brie is trying to figure out who gave Jem the alcohol, Roger comes up and says, hey, what's up? And she turns and says, your son is a drunkard.
So I'm just going to backtrack for just a second. He was faced, but I'm going to backtrack for just a second because I'm sure all of you probably feel very similar to this. But I personally have been cooking 3 meals a day of my own cooking since March. And I am so tired of my own cooking and everything that when they were describing this German feast, all I could think was, summer. I want to eat that. I want to eat that. I was like, I want
even
sauerkraut.
The meat. Like, I don't need
I
the
have
meat.
Sausages.
I'm having, just give me the bread and the cheese. And I don't like beer. I'm a bad fake German, as I say. I don't like beer and I don't like, well, I'm a vegetarian, so. It's not that I don't like meat. I don't like what you have to do to get it, but.
Your computer sounds like a cow.
You hear it? I'm sorry, you guys. I promise you by next week it will be updated. I have a computer. I have a new computer. That's the whole thing. It will be. I am fixing it up. I'm preparing it. It does sound like a cow.
Anyway, right. We can go back to the drunk children now.
So your son's
but
a drunkard.
You skipped over all the food and I was like, oh. Like I was drooling reading this chapter.
And Summer, tell us sad. Again, since you already spoiled us, tell us again what got him to be a drunkard?
Cherry Bounce.
Speaking of which, and I promise people already, if you're a supporter on Patreon, whatever level, doesn't matter, lowest to highest level of any amount, you are automatically added, or automatically, when you give us your Instagram name, you're added to our close friends on Instagram, which means we can do stories and have them go only to our Patreon supporters. The reason I say this is because about a month ago, end of May, so I guess whatever, May 2020, my family and friends, we got together and shared 18 pounds of cherries. Now, I have not eaten them. I washed them and I froze them and I bagged them up and they're in the freezer. But I need to make them probably this month because the thing is, I want to make cherry bounce. And what I said when I had them and was freezing them and putting them away,
it's got to sit for a while. You'll have cherry bounce for Christmas at this point.
Exactly. Well, exactly. So 7 months is six months is going to be pretty perfect. Anyway, so I said that when I made them, I don't need to do the whole thing, but, you know, take some stills or little short videos or snippets of the process just for funsies. And then I do one, you know, maybe of the finished product or the almost finished, the pre-6-month-old product, and share with and tag Teresa from Outlander Kitchen because, you know, it's her recipe that we're going to use, y'all. I'm going to use y'all. Anyway, so cherry bounce. It was a cherry bounce. It turns out Ronnie Cooper is fine. He wasn't in love with the girl. The problem? He's lustful. That's it. He just wanted a hole.
Wow.
Hey, talk to Scott.
That came out of your face.
It did. Not a hole. He wants his hole. That's what he wants.
No, you made it pretty clear. He just wanted a hole.
Well, but it doesn't matter.
If he didn't care about that match, then it didn't matter. He just wanted a wife.
Agreed. He wanted his hole, which means
any wife will do.
Oh, Lord. So Roger, coming back from Cooper's, goes to find Fergus. So she has both the drunk Germain and Jem, and she puts the boys together on the ground, makes like a little pallet, puts straw around them, puts her cloak over them so they can sleep off the drunk. She makes note of the way Roger's voice sounded when he'd come back from Ronnie's. It was more relaxed. Then she lies down next to the boys. She prays and is, you know, almost on her way to dreamland. Then Roger slips in behind her. Okay. She hears him humming and she wants to encourage him to continue. And they go on and he ultimately takes her encouragement as, let's do it. Or,
well, but let's she was go. Humming. He was humming in his sleep.
Yes. Yes.
He like immediately fell asleep and was humming in his sleep. And I think that what she was getting at is that when he's relaxed and not thinking about it, his vocal cords aren't nearly
as muscles,
damaged.
Yeah, they relax.
As they are when he is alert and stressed and has a lot of other things going on and when he's thinking about it. So that's what she's getting at. And I think that him humming, and I think that, I know that, she misses.
Yeah, him singing.
The Roger before the hanging.
Quote, Roger was usually very good at reading her body language, but evidently his skill had dissolved in whiskey, unquote. He does diddle her with people around, and then he flips her on her back, and now he's singing. Now he goes home and they're doing it. And she's like, oh my God, there's people like 5 feet over there and 2 feet over there. Like she's,
Doesn't Fergus come and collect Germain in the middle of the whole thing?
Yep. She hears Fergus come to get Germain. And Roger has fit. When he finishes, he tells her, thank you. And she responds, don't mention it. And then he hiccups.
No, really, don't.
No, really, don't. And he hiccups asleep. And she says, sing to me. So, my angel of music. Yes, I can sing that song, but I won't. Yeah.
Please don't.
I just did my rendition.
It just gets worse.
Lee M. Right. She did her homework here. Roger takes a play from Jamie's old playbook. We get the almost identical lovemaking in public scene between Roger and Bree that we had with Jamie and Claire in Outlander. Jamie is driven by a post-battle cockstand to put some serious moves on Claire, regardless of her desires about having sex surrounded by 20 men. Roger's pastoral care duties and some drinking seem to have put him in a similar condition. Neither husband seems to take, quote, not right now, dear, as an answer. Mm-mm. In Outlander, quote, It was a wonderful feeling to have Jamie lie down and firmly gather me in next to his large, warm body. A breath of snow and ashes. Quote, Roger was putting out even more heat. She, Brianna, sighed and snuggled back against him, feeling warm, protected. Unquote. Outlander. Hot sex in front of 20 sleeping men. A breath of snow and ashes. Hot sex behind 2 sleeping children. Shoot. That's bad. Both books. Lots of...
You know, it reminds me of those books we used to read by, was it Laurel K. Hamilton?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Who, it seemed like every book she had to top herself. Yeah. Like the first book, it was like vanilla doing it. And then by like book 12, there was like 80 men and they were in a shower and there was steam and one of them turns into a leopard and then somebody else comes at her.
But they were all in her at once.
Yeah, at the same time. Yeah, I'm like,
that's a lot.
It's just, oh boy. You just, I appreciate that Diana does not feel the need to constantly one up her own sex.
No, she just rejiggers it.
Scenes. Yeah.
So both books, lots right. of.
And it's realistic always.
Both books, lots of leg sliding and skirt rucking or ruckling. Both books use the word slippery. Outlander. Claire gives into Jamie despite, quote, 27 years of propriety yet evidence to the contrary, unquote. A breath of snow and ashes. Bree decides, quote, lie back and enjoy it, she thought. Wantonness was winning, unquote. The corn grinding song. A Mackenzie family tradition. That was in here too. I forgot that. I forgot to mention that. That was very funny.
Well, you know they got that. That's where they got that in the first season with the Dougal grinding the corn.
Oh, yeah. Outlander. Claire, quote, turning my head, I could see the dim figure of the sentry leaning against a rock on the far side of the fire. He had his back tactfully turned. I was mildly shocked to realize that I was not even embarrassed. Unquote. A breath of snow and ashes. About Bree. Quote, she let her head roll to the side. Someone was there. It was Fergus come to fetch his son. Unquote. That was good. That's a little bit of research there, girl.
That was like a dissertation. Today, we're going to explore all of the public sex scenes in the books of Diana Gabaldon to date.
Lorraine closes us out with, I loved the sense of family and closeness portrayed in this chapter. Jamie and Rollo caring for Ian. Bree and Roger sharing their thoughts with each other as they walk to be with their son. Roger recounting fond memories of the Reverend. The Beardsley twins protecting Lizzie. And the McGillivrys and the warmth of celebrating the upcoming nuptials of Senga and Heinrich. We learn a lot in this tremendously long chapter, and for me, it was extremely satisfying.
And that was chapter 6. Join us next week when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with, we'll actually be finishing part 1 with chapter 7 entitled James Fraser, Indian Agent. And then we will be starting part 2. Part 2 is entitled A Gathering of Shadows with chapter 8 entitled Victim of a Massacre. And as always, if you'd like to be a contributor to our read-along, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/snow. And we've been having some issues with notifications. I know.
I don't know.
With notifications not coming through with the way that Facebook has been working. So we've changed up the way that we are accepting contributors for chapters. So you can still go to that same page to find out what chapters are available still. And then instead of writing a comment on that page, you can send an email to summer@outlanderpod.com. And I will make sure that you, within 24 hours, that is updated on the spreadsheet and you will have your chapters. But that being said, if you would like to join us to continue the conversation, please join us at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Elizabeth S. And to find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and to find out what the heck a co-producer even is, find out at outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And again, I say and again a lot, but and again, if you want to wear my art on your face on a bag that you carry, if you'd like a throw pillow on your in your house,
or in your car,
please visit our new shop or your car, wherever you want to put it. Go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop, and that will take you to our storefront on TeePublic.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.